I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you everybody for coming tonight. We have a number of great presentations tonight, starting with the Youth and Government Club presentation.
Yes, Mr. Schiavone, do you want us to come around the other side to look at this, or is this good enough for us to have in front of us? I didn't know if you were going to have a lot of pictures for the board to see.
We have about five or six slides of what we did up in Albany.
So let's come around.
Okay, so we'll come around?
Yeah, I just not yet, though?
Not yet, though.
Well, let you know. Right
here. Until you talk. I defer to my colleague.
Are you guys ready?
Yes, Mr. Bolger. I should have asked you the question, right?
No. I'm Mr. Bolger. I just want to thank the board, administrators, and parents. We're here to present you guys about what we've been doing with the new Youth and Government Club this year. When Mr. Schiavone and myself were trying to think of an academic club that dealt with social studies and government, Mr. Schiavone found YMCA's Youth and Government Club. Now, William Floyd is a school district that has this club. They are the only school district on Long Island that has it, and it is their largest club at William Floyd. So last year, Mr. Schiavone and myself took a couple trips out to William Floyd, and we watched their club. We were blown away. In the 10 years I've been teaching, it is hands down the best thing I've ever seen with kids. We always talk about, with NYP and different things, about engaging kids and giving them the tools to experience learning in the environment, and that is Youth and Government. The motto for the YMCA Youth and Government is democracy must be learned by every generation. So this year, when we started our Youth and Government, we ran every club with, you know, trying to teach the kids the proper procedures and how to run meetings, and then we started to head over to William Floyd and meet with them, with their Youth and Government Club, to debate bills and learn how to write bills. Then we had district conference in January where we compete with the other kids with their bills, much like they would reenact a legislator. So they go into committee, they debate the bills, they rank the bills, and then they get to the floor. The best bills get to the floor. In March, we went to Albany, the state conference. This is where kids from all over New York State go. And the thing that first caught me is the student counselors. It's completely student-driven. Mr. Schiavone and myself literally get there, and we watch the kids go. It was the easiest chaperoning I've ever done, but it also was the most impressive because the student governor, the student, the kids who ran the show, you know, full rides to Yale, you know, Ivy League schools, and they worked till 2 o'clock in the morning. Or they told us that, William Floyd told us that when we get to Albany, it would just go on and on and on, and you wouldn't get a lot of sleep. And literally, the kids went till midnight every night. It was unbelievable. And it lived up to everything we hoped it would with our kids. And our kids didn't know what to expect, and we hoped that when we went, that they would fall in love with it. The Floyd chaperones told us, and the Floyd students told us, that just wait till you guys go to Albany. They'll come back different. And that's exactly what happened. On the train ride home, because we took the train up, because we only had 10 kids, they did nothing but gather around and talk about what we're going to do next year and how things are going to be different. We have kids that want to run for office, and it was just amazing. I have two examples. These are the actual bill books that YMCA makes. I'm just going to pass one here. You can kind of get a look. Our four bills that are in the handout you have in front of you. But this is all the bills from New York State that the kids presented this year. I don't want to brag, but we had four teams presenting four bills. We were one of two schools that were brand new at the YMCA conference. Out of our four bills, three were nominated top 10 in their chamber. We were nominated for best bill, and we were nominated for best debater. Now, let me just, out of a, how many kids are in a chamber, Mr. Schiavone?
73 in the Senate and 150 in each one of the assembly chambers.
And they nominate, I think, four kids per chamber. Only one kid wins. And we were nominated for best debater on our first year. And the other schools were just blown away by how well our kids did. So I am so excited to see where we go from here. What we have for you tonight is our students are going to give you a little show as to what they did. And then we'll present you with these the PowerPoint to give you some pictures on our experience. Thank you.
And to act as a chair for this evening, we're gonna present one of our bills to you. All right, we have four bills. There are 130 bills up in the state, and Carlos is going to be our mock chair. If you would yield the floor, no, you can stay there, but. Carlos?
Come on up.
Gentlemen?
Thank you, Mr. Silvani.
You're welcome.
Welcome to the Youth and Government Mock Chambers. And being passed around is a book with every single bill that was presented in Albany, totaling at about 130. The first and only bill presenting today is AL-16 on page 118 of the bill book. And being as we don't have a bill clerk, I will act as so and read the Enact 2. Enact 2, amend Bill 214/A, Section 2 of the New York State Civil Practice Law and Rules in relation to causes of action for medical, dental, and pediatric malpractice. So will the bill sponsors please yield to the stand. Are the bill sponsors present?
Thank you, sir, Chair, yes.
The bill sponsors have retained 4 minutes to do opening and closing statements and will begin when ready.
Thank you, sir, Chair. Matthew Plaster, New York State Delegation. Action for medical, dental, and podiatric malpractice has to be commenced within 2 years and 6 months. It's not only the shortest negligence statute in the state of New York, except for claims against municipalities, but New York is one of only 6 states to not have a discovery law. This injustice is sometimes seen when a patient discovers the growth of a cancerous tumor. For example, a patient is seen by a physician for rather general complaints and a series of tests are ordered, including an x-ray. The patient is diagnosed as having no illness. Several years later, the patient is diagnosed as having a spot on the lung by a different physician. A review of the original x-ray film showed the presence of a spot on the earlier film. As is the case of Laverne Willickson, a Brooklyn woman who later died of a normally curable cancer. Time is of the essence in the treatment of cancer if one is to get a favorable chance of long-term survival. If more than 2.5 years have passed from the date of the original x-ray, the patient's claim is time-barred, despite the fact that the patient could not have reasonably known of the existence of the medical condition. This bill would remove this gaping loophole in the law, which allows a patient's right to expire prior to the patient even knowing that she had any rights in the first place. This bill would certainly not mandate that any claim be deemed to have merit. Instead, the bill would merely prevent the statute of limitations from being used as an unfair and inequitable shield from professionally negligent medical misconduct and allow victims, such as Laverne and her family, to receive fair compensation. Thank you, Sir Chair. I reserve the rest of my time to the closing statement.
The bill sponsors have retained 2 minutes and 24 seconds. Being as opening statements have elapsed, we will now move on to a series of technical questions, and I advise that any of the Board of Ed is willing to participate if need be. Do we have any technical questions on the floor?
Is the proposal that there be no statute of limitations whatsoever, or are you proposing that it be extended?
Well, how this would be was the time period for the statute of limitation, it wouldn't be extended at all. Rather, it would begin counting down from the 2.5 years from when the victim discovers medical misconduct has taken place, rather than from when it actually happens. So right now, if misconduct takes place, and 2.5 years later it's discovered, and you find out that you have a fatal condition because of it, you do not have any chance to sue and receive compensation for that.
You have a lot more cases. You said the one, and it's very heartbreaking, right? Are there a lot more cases that you've seen out there? Or?
Well, part of the issue with trying to actually find cases for this bill was that it's very confidential and protected between attorneys and clients. So this was only an example we could find on a website that was this one of their most successful cases. So it's a very private issue, and it only comes out if it's really famous and is broadcast to the general media.
What impact do you think effectively extending the period of time for which a claim can be brought will have on healthcare costs or insurance costs for doctors?
Well, it's an impact that has to be weighed in a it kind of checks and balances the system. While, yes, it will increase insurance costs, that is unfortunate and unmitigated and necessary increase, because when you have malpractice, your premium will go up. It's the same thing for anybody who has a business and they're paying insurance premiums. If an accident happens on the job, your premium will go up. However, if that accident, which is most of the time preventable, did not happen, well, your premium would not go up for that reason. So it's something you have to weigh that, well, if I myself had paid attention during this surgery and not had left a sponge inside my patient, now my malpractice insurance would not be increasing. So it's an impact that has to be weighed, because while, yes, this could lead to potentially more people trying to claim malpractice, your claim still has to be deemed meritorious and still has to be proven in court that, in fact, malpractice had occurred.
Great answer.
Do you have any thoughts of why the logic behind this original law, why they did that for 2.5 years? Was there a reason that they came up with that, or just...
Personally, I think it's a lobbying issue, and I feel that it's under the Doctors Association of America and the physicians, and I feel that it's a time frame that the lobbyists feel that they know most claims will not happen in that span, and that will effectively run out of time for a patient, because as unfortunate as it is more expensive to pay for, to continue for someone to live than it is for them.
Thank you.
Being as the period for technical questions has elapsed, we will now move on to a series of con pro debate. Is there any cons on the floor? Delegate Sarah Smalka, you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sarah Smalka, New York State Delegation. While I applaud the intent of this bill, I believe it's an attack on doctors, and it will increase insurance rates too much, and that's why I urge the failure of this bill.
Thank you. Is there a pro statement on the floor? Delegate Guler.
Thank you, sir. Chair Yaron Guler, New York State Delegation. Imagine receiving a surgery and after several years you begin to get sick and you go back to your doctor and there's a sponge or even a surgical instrument forgotten in your body and you can't do anything about it because statute of limitations says many years have passed and you can't even blame the doctors who did this to you. We are not doctors, so we don't always know when our bodies are in serious danger, so we hold it off. This is why I urge the passage of this bill. With this bill, we can help those who have not gotten their fair chance to take action against towards doctors who have done some horrible things to their bodies. Thank you, Sir Chair.
Now, seeing as the period for con-pro debate has elapsed, we will now move on to closing statements by the sponsors. They have retained 2 minutes and 24 seconds and may start when they are ready.
Thank you, Chair. I would like you all now to picture yourself sitting by the bedside of your sibling. He or she is withering away with stage 4 cancer. And when talking with the physician that you had entrusted their life, you learned that in fact that same physician had seen signs of cancer but had not diagnosed it on a previous x-ray slide. Your right to question this physician has now expired. How is it that this day and age, the current law in New York State prevents you from questioning if malpractice has occurred? Once the time limit expires, that's it. You can no longer question why the doctor didn't detect your sibling's cancer, despite obvious signs on our x-ray slides. To be able to question is a fundamental right that we, as New York State citizens, all have. Do not forget that your right to simply question whether malpractice has occurred or not has a time limit. Our bill merely wants you, the suffering brother or sister, or mother or father, to be able to question, because that is your fundamental right. We cannot take this issue and simply say that every single case is an attack on a doctor. Yes, some claims are not meritorious, but those that feel that malpractice has occurred and have substantial evidence to prove it in court can potentially win their case and receive their just financial compensation, and that is what the law and what our court system is about. Thank you.
Thank you, delegates. Seeing as the time for closing the stations has elapsed, the sponsors have yielded 51 seconds to the chair, and we will now move on to a period of voting. I ask everyone, including the Board of Ed, to vote. All those in favor for the bill, please, in your regular speaking voices and hands raised, say aye now.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
In the eyes of the chair, this bill has passed. This presentation has been a small-scale demonstration on what occurred in Albany, New York for the Youth in Government program, and this marks the start for the presentation.
Okay, slideshow now.
So we're going to take a look at this.
This PowerPoint I have presented has been an overview of the experience in the program itself that we've been through this year, which has been just an amazing experience to have. To put it in layman's terms, youth in government is a mock government. It's as if you take the model you lent, but you make it to the New York style of government with a legislative, executive, and even judicial style branching. Over 650 students from all parts of New York converged to Albany to present, and as said before, there has been over 130 bills presented just last year alone. This club is mainly student-run and nonpartisan. As you've seen by our mock presentation, it was mainly us alone who were doing most of the work, while the supervisors were more in the background attending more of the technical stuff. And this year, and including youth in government overall, is a challenging yet fulfilling club that paves way for future opportunities for everyone involved. With the first year experience, as the world you stated, 3/4 of the bills presented made it to the top 10 in their respective chambers, and one of our bill groups was nominated for best bill in their respective assembly, and one of our own was nominated for best debater in the Senate. And overall, this year, everyone had just a very good time in Albany with, truthfully, just no complaints from anyone there. The benefits of youth in government really reap their reward at the end, as Dan Panico and Lee Zeldin were both former members of youth in government, and this program really encourages just future government involvement, as it shows the positives and benefits that about the government, and honestly, it just looks really well in colleges, too. Throughout the days, we were presenting our bills, and this is basically just a basic outline for each of the days. But more importantly, each of our bills had the proper light, being one of the presenters, Yaron Guler's bill, for making dietary supplements prescription-based, Sarah Snelko, one of our own also, for a bill to make same-day voter registration in New York legal, as you've seen Matt and Quentin's bill on making medical malpractice extended, and myself and my partner, who isn't here, our bill on eliminating tackling from middle school football. So really, we've learned a lot throughout this whole experience and with each of these days. And finally, overall, youth in government has left us with fantastic memories that we are not seeing to forget. I can assure you right now that this experience has changed each one of us, including me, personally. I would not be able to speak here. Last year, I would be just a complete wreck, and I'd be freezing out. So we'd really like to thank you for allowing us to partake in this, because this has just been an extraordinary opportunity for us, and I'm pretty sure that we are not going to forget this. Nowhere time soon. So thank you all. Basically, if you see most of the people, including myself, if you see an issue just spread out, you typically want to try to solve it. So this program allows you to creatively think of an idea and how to really just take care of it. For example, with me, seeing all in the news lines, a lot of these football players growing older, they have problems with their heads and having problems with just complete mental impact on their brains. That really allowed me to create this bill. And it happens with a lot more. Some are personal experiences. Some are just bills that they feel are necessary in order to continue.
That's great.
And some we realize aren't realistic. And so throughout the year, we'll evaluate, and then we kind of pick which ones we want to take to home.
But they're student-generated ideas where we need to change.
So that's the way we came up with our idea for our bill, about 7 years ago, my mom was misdiagnosed with breast cancer. Well, wasn't diagnosed with it, and we actually had this happen to us with the statute of limitations not expiring and not being able to take legal action. So my parents had campaigned in Albany with a lawyer who specializes in this specific field to push a similar bill. So we wanted to take that and really push it this way and see how far we could get.
It's great. It's really, really good.
A major part of the program is spent in the Santa Marta's library, where we are on the computers. We're doing research on Monday and Thursday nights, and we're seeing if the bills comply. If there is New York State law, the kids study New York State law. And most of the bills are actually amendments or addendums to existing law. And they have to find the law, they have to look at the origins of the law, and then they have to be able to defend it.
One thing that wasn't said that I want to point out, in Albany, we go to the New York State Capitol building, and so what you just saw, the kids, it's magical. They do it in the actual assembly halls in the New York State Capitol building. So like to see Carlos debating in the Senate, and the walls are gold, and you know the kids are up on the big chairs, and they're sitting. And there's a couple scenes, if you click back on the slideshow, they're actually sitting in the legislators' seats. You can see here is Jacob Greer and Carlos in the Senate. And it's just, they're debating in the actual area, in the same seats and everything. And I asked Mr. Plastrick on the bus, on the train ride home, like, when were you like, wow? And he was like, when we actually, that on Saturday, because Friday's in the hotel where they kind of go through committee, but he's like, on Saturday, when we got to the Capitol building and I actually sat in the chair, he was like, this is cool, right?
And so I'm a STEM student. I'm a robotic guy. This is not my area of, you know, interest before this, but joining this club and doing this has really changed that. It's
made me powerful to walk in and see what goes on.
Sitting in those chairs, debating the bills, and really
the change you can make.
This bottom picture right here is actually Mr. Plastrick debating. He's giving a pro statement or a con statement. I'm not sure which one. But the bill sponsors are actually up there. You can see them if you look closely right here. And then the chair is sitting up there. And then there's Mr. Plastrick with a microphone in the chamber actually giving a pro statement.
Great presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I take a picture?
Certainly. You know, this is, what we did was we participated in the legislative branch. There's three branches up there. This thing was deep. His bill passed, but was vetoed by the governor. And they weren't happy about it.
That was actually our that he read at the end, was our veto override that we never got to say.
With 3/4 of our bill passing, 2/3 were vetoed.
Take a couple. Be on the website tomorrow.
Great. Yeah, great job.
So what you have are the four bills from Santa Marta's. The top part is the description of the program. You know,
Thank you.
What I will say to the board, as Ms. Ingolia is pulling up the next PowerPoint from our guidance department, Ms. Hessian, thank you very much. You know, Board of Education, many times we talk about the clubs and the importance of clubs enriching our education and, you know, the student involvement. And I think tonight, this Board of Education added this club last year in the recommendation. And for next year in the budget that we're going to present in about an hour from now, we are presenting another club at the middle school, Youth in Government Club. So, you know, sometimes you need to see it from all of you firsthand to say, wow, you are impressive individuals. And what you got from this, it shows us that, you know, keep pushing and trying to get these clubs that truly are reflective of what we're looking for. So thank you so much. You guys were just wonderful.
Thank you.
Now, if you have to study, feel free to go home. You don't have to stay there looking at us.
Absolutely. Thank you. 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 Thank you
absolutely. We don't expect that. We have a couple presentations. Tonight, Board of Education, as you know, several months ago, we had a presentation from our guidance department. I've asked them to come tonight and just to give us an update on some of the initiatives that you spoke about. So as we're all so excited in the fall, did they come to fruition and how did we do?
It was the same year.
I know, right?
It's
a
year.
Yeah, it's been a long year. So thank you.
It's been a short year.
That.
It seems like you were just here yesterday.
That's true. Yes, so last year we had hosted a spring college fair, and we felt that it went really well. So this year we hosted a fall. It's through the South Shore Consortium, where it's a group of, it's about 120 colleges that attend. So September 27th we had the fall, and then we just had another one in the spring again. So I think that was pretty successful. We kind of asked, like, you know, grades 9 through 12. I made the mistake of forgetting to invite middle schoolers. I meant to ask them to come, but I think that they need a little preparation first, like what kinds of questions to ask. But I think that it's really good for the students during the school day because they really feel comfortable in talking to the reps. We walk around and try to have them speak and, you know, because they really don't know what to ask. So
did you see a broadening of the schools to which the seniors applied as a result of that this year?
You know, it's really hard to say. Yeah. It's a really hard thing to measure. And it is also interesting, and as you get to know the grade levels, each grade is very different, too. So whether it's the size of the grade or just sort of like the dynamic of the grade, you know, I think this year, you know, there are some good schools, but each class is very different. But it is kind of hard to measure. Hopefully, though, they're a little bit more prepared in the future and at least feel more comfortable in talking to college reps.
Sure.
That's really the goal.
And if you have them coming, you know, at middle school at some point or freshman, at some point it should, would think it would expand.
Right.
Maybe the first year.
How many colleges were represented?
120. Yes. Tom Kelly, I think, was not very happy with me because of all the tables that we used. We're getting used to it, so hopefully we can handle it. But it's an hour and a half, but it's such a great use of time. It's just, it's great for the kids to see all the reps there.
Nice.
Okay. So this year we were able to visit SUNY Farmingdale on March 1st, and we just went last week, March 27th, to Marist. I would say for SUNY Farmingdale, it was kind of tough to get the kids to go. I don't know if it was the day. Sometimes you just have to keep on announcing it. So we had about 12 students go, but it was really worthwhile. And Marist, we had 37. So it was a long day, but I think that a lot of the kids were just floored as to, first of all, Marist is just, it's a beautiful campus. So I kind of picked it because I sort of like, I want the students to be excited about college. So
juniors, seniors, or
We invited juniors, but then when we didn't fill the bus, we also invited 10th graders.
Okay.
So we had a number of 10th graders go as well. I think the maturity level for 11th tends to be better. The 10th graders were, it's a little bit harder for them, and I don't know if they, you know, it's good that they went. But I think in the future, I probably would prep them a little bit more.
But it helps them to start to think about what am I going to see when I get there? What should I look at as I'm
A few of the students really were just, they were so impressed. I mean, it really is a beautiful campus, and they were able to sit in an admissions talk and then go for the tour and then eat in the cafeteria with all the other college students. So
Farmingdale was worthwhile or was not?
There were probably only about 12 students that went, but we went, and we made the best of it. And I think in the end, actually, it turned out to be a great tour. We had a great student guide who really has had a great opportunity there. And we saw the STEM buildings. Some of the students, didn't realize that, Farmingdale is so close, and it has a lot to offer. So I think they were surprised. Farmingdale is so different than it used to be.
Yeah.
So,
do you plan on going? Because I have 3 next year.
I'll see. I really like, again, focusing on quality. So sometimes it's really tough if the students have a game that day, because with Marist we didn't get back until about 5, so they all missed lacrosse. And
right.
So my thought was maybe to visit UConn and you know, somewhere else. So I'm thinking two longer trips, maybe not like a local school, maybe two, you know, schools that are a couple of hours away, two different trips. So this year...
But do we try to, like, I'm sorry, it just popped in my head, but do we try to, like, and I don't know the levels of Marist and Farmdale, how they compare, but I would think we should
they're
try...
They're very different.
We should try to have that difference, I think.
Right, they're very different. Marist is pretty competitive, very expensive, where Farmdale is a SUNY, and I really Farmdale has a lot of great programs.
Did the kids cross over that went? Did this 12 go to Marist as well, or was it...
I would say... We had a number of seniors this year that wanted to go to Farmingdale, which I let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Marist, I think it just stirs more interest because a lot of people know Marist College, and it's, you know, very, you know, yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. So, but they're very different, so I would kind of go for something like that. Like UConn is a public school, large school, and then I probably would shoot for something maybe like private and smaller, maybe.
And how many can you take? Like, is it just a matter of
The West Wall is like 50 students.
It's we got to figure out
38.
How to,
you know, I was pretty happy with 38.
38 is great. I mean, how to get to your point? 12 is like I'm sure it's a lot of planning.
And we did connect ed calls.
There's got to be some way early in the year to start and talk to
the
parents.
I would say when I did a connect ed call or two, maybe we had 12 students, and then about 5 days before, all of a sudden they were just coming because then word gets out. Oh my God, we have to go too. So sometimes it's just a matter of. Other kids saying they're going.
There's also got to be a lot of kids that come into guidance that don't know yet that you can say you're going on this trip, you know, or however forceful you can be. Yeah.
And if you have more, offers throughout the year,
right.
I might not be able to go
right.
in, you know, March, but maybe I could go in October if we had three
right.
or four. We budgeted for that for next year. So we have budgeted for
right.
more, for the next year, hoping that we'd have a couple more, and maybe St. John's. I know that was somebody
St. John's, I like to consideration,
you know, which isn't too bloody. Might still make
right.
it back to the ball game.
Yeah.
But I think if we had a couple more, you know, if we got 30 each time and we had five of them or something at the end, you know, by a few years, that would be great.
So this year, freshmen, every grade level is on Naviance, and so the freshmen were introduced to Naviance, and we also went into all the classrooms to introduce method test prep. In addition, on the night of our college information night, we also had the owner of the company, Method Test Prep, speak about the usefulness of Method Test Prep and increasing their chances of performing better on the SATs, ACTs, and everything that we offer because we pay for this. And we find that a lot of students don't use it, so that's why we had a special night to introduce it to parents, students. And we had a decent outcome. I think there were...
You're about 20 or so.
And it really is a great program. So
did the usage numbers go up? Can we track that?
I have to check. We can track that.
It'd be interesting to track that and then also see kind of on the average of scores
right.
go up as a result.
Right. I mean, kids definitely say it's definitely helpful. So that was something new, too. This just recently, March 30th, we hosted Mr. Peter Van Buskirk, who's the admissions expert on the best college fit, and he was absolutely fantastic. I mean, Mrs. Rank would attest to that.
That is so good.
He's really amazing. He's just an amazing speaker, and he just puts it in such a way that he just relates to people. He has a great sense of humor. I was reading some of the feedback that he gave me, and students really said that they learned so much about how important it is to not only work hard in school and do well in school, but to also how important it is to demonstrate who you are and really let college admissions people know your special qualities. And, you know, I think sometimes kids don't realize or they don't know how to do that. So that was a great night. That was a good turnout, too.
That was like 38, I think.
Yeah.
I counted.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see behind me.
Yeah. And there was a lot of, interaction with the audience. You had people speaking, looking at transcripts, deciding, you know, who would be admitted, who would not.
And that was open
fantastic.
To everybody? Was
open
that open 9 to 12?
9 through 12. 7 through 12, actually.
And he's actually extended, and I received my first email from him this
mm-hmm.
morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he's extended himself, and he's sending emails about what admission people look for, and like today's was about financial aid.
Yes.
It was really nice.
Yeah, so I get all of those too. Anyone can really get them, but they're so helpful. He probably sends out his emails, you know, at least once a week, twice a week on every topic possible. So that was really worthwhile. And this year we started our career cafe. So December 12th, we had the career of engineering. We had about 35 students, and then Josh Foster presented on law and what goes into it and how to prepare for that, and that was in December, or that was January. And this, I don't know what happened to like this last month. I think it was just so crazy with snowstorms. But April we have some different ideas about what we can do. And what we're proud of is that, well, I'm now on ConnectEd, so everybody gets to hear my voice about all the upcoming, you know, initiatives and guidance, but also we have, you know, a lot of students and parents on their minds. Any ways we can, anything that we can do to enhance our communication, we're trying hard.
Have we done anything with regard to the communication on summer programs and internships? So is that the science last night, the science on society induction, yeah. And, you know, a lot of those students have done. Are we doing anything right. like getting that?
So everything out? Is now being posted on the website. Mm-hmm. So there, everything that comes through my desk, I'm actually being trained. I'm working with them tomorrow so that I can learn how to do it. But there's a link to everything that we get.
Yeah, they put a lot more on it. If you go onto the website, you're going to see a lot of the summer programs. We vet it first to make sure we kind of get it, you know, just a little feel about it.
Do the kids, is there interest in doing that? It's not posting, but in going
into it. If you saw from the science, last night, just them alone, they're so impressed.
That was great. Yeah.
Mr. Soto and I were talking about that, how that's increased over the years.
Absolutely.
And now it's almost a known thing. Four or five or six more kids will come in this summer already that are going to go to programs. So the interest is definitely increasing. And I would suppose the same with, I guess we'll
find anytime out. A student comes in, or we just have all of our junior conferences, so anything that comes up there, so they can always ask. We have everything, you know, posted. And
I think we should just be talking about that at every opportunity, because it's such a great hands-on. I mean, it's what each of them said last night. You get the opportunity to go, and somebody said, I decided I don't want to do that, you know, which is fine. That's the point.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just wanted to add, number one, personal experience, meth test prep. My own daughter took it, and she had tremendous progress from using meth test prep. Secondly, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Lisa, we have secured a speaker for college admissions for student-athlete coming in May, I believe the May 1st or May 8th. The Booster Club is paid for that speaker to come. But I just didn't get a chance to. So I just wanted to let you know that was another initiative of the guys.
So it's somebody that's
specific for student athletes.
Specific for student athletes about how they should be thinking about college. So obviously juniors, if it's May, how they should be thinking
it's
about
college. It's actually designed for anybody from 7th through high school.
Okay.
And we've been doing that usually every couple of years. Now sometimes you decide whether you should have it every year or should you have something else and offset it. So this speaker we've had once or twice already.
Correct. I've also had him for the last 15 years, actually.
He's unbelievable as well, so that should be exciting.
The key is, I heard Annette actually told me that Buskirk was phenomenal, is to get people out. You know, the same thing about 12 to Farmingdale, it's a lot to, you know, how do we get more parents there? How do we get more kids there to learn and get their eyes open? How do we get more kids interested in? Some of it's ConnectEd. Sometimes you get a bunch of ConnectEds and it's going white noise. I don't know.
Unfortunately, for this presentation, the presentation of student athletes will probably get 100 people.
Yeah.
It's always been that way.
Yeah.
Even in my former.
Is it because the
people,
better
communication? About scholarships and they're thinking about sports in school and athletics.
Yeah.
But we will get more people in. But the great thing is, there's a lot of crossover of the exact same things that are being taught and shown.
But we should think about that. So, I mean, if there's a lot of coaches talking about these things, so to your point, you have 100 families out for this, maybe it's going down that avenue of, you know, we're very, very sports focused, going down that avenue of bringing the coaches in. I don't know, bring the coaches in and, you know, saying, drive, you know, get these kids to come on the college tour. We're pushing them. I don't know, different ways to talk and get them excited.
Or get them when you have a captured audience, and that's what we try to do with some of the mandatory meetings. And now Mr. Dodge done that, because we know we're going to have them. So to have them there when they're going to be there anyway,
right.
And might as well get some real good use
out
of those.
We've made announcements over various topics at music functions, before the program starts, whatever else. So these are great opportunities for any message we want to send, because we have a captive audience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And now we have Mr. Soto and Mr. Jeans. Thank you so much for an update with our high school science research.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. I wanted to touch on last night. Last night, we all attended and it was great to see all the five board members there last night as well. We attended the National Science Honor Society, and we inducted 32 members. Into the Honor Society. Now, what was most interesting about last night, from my perspective, I think Russ kind of shares this perspective as well, is that we had four student presentations. And all the four students that presented basically spoke about what they did the previous month. So we had one student who wants to become a physician's assistant. She took a class at King's College, where she's ultimately going to attend. And she shared her experience with the audience, and obviously the inductees and the teachers and everyone else in attendance. Another student went to UConn who wants to be a surgeon and also studied in the medical field. Another student actually went to the College of Williams and Mary, and she actually wants to be a sports science doctor. Now, and the fourth one actually did an internship, a very interesting internship over the summer at Brookhaven Hospital, where she kind of shadowed a nurse, which is what she wants to do. Now, all the students were great. It was great to hear it, to hear their experience of what they did over the summer and how it sort of like culminated in their activities in terms of what they want to do in their profession. Now, with the exception, I believe, one student, no one really deviated from like their profession. I think all three, with the exception of one, which I believe she still wants to go into medicine, but she wasn't really too sure about sports science. But once again, it was a way for them to kind of show how their studies in science sort of culminated in this activity. Now, what was interesting is that when we actually viewed the student presentations, we sat in the audience. And I sat next to Mr. Stewart, and he looked over to me after, like, I think the first presenter, and said, you know, this is great. This is why we are here. And it sounds like a simple sort of statement, but there's a lot of profound knowledge in that, in the sense that what that evening represented is a culmination of the entire science department's activities, from K to 12. At the elementary, we had the science fair, which is, once again, another celebration of science, another way for students to kind of look at that innovation and look at how the world around them works. And at the beginning of this year, we actually petitioned the board, the administrative team petitioned the board, to support a science research program at the high school. Thankfully, they agreed to do that. On November 3rd, we actually presented an overview of the program. At the close of that presentation, Mr. Foster, our board president, had a sort of follow-up statement or question and wanted us to come back in April. So Josh, it's April, we're back. And the question was, he wanted to know how would the program formulate sort of this linkage between community and outside internship opportunities. So to sort of give us an overview of some of the connections that have been made over the course of 5 months, Josh, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Jimmies.
How you doing? I want to just thank you guys for giving me the time tonight to speak with you all. It's good to see you all again. I saw a lot of you guys last night at the Science Honor Society production. So we appreciate you guys coming out and supporting the science department and all that we do. So as Mr. Soto said, when I spoke to you guys back in November, we have a lot of big plans, a lot of big things we'd like to do. One of the things, and actually I want to kind of echo on some of the sentiments that our youth and government group brought in, which was it's always beneficial to take on a challenge that's relevant and that's related to your personal experience. So you heard Mr. Plastrick, who even admitted he's one of, you know, kind of more the STEM track. He's one of my research students. And so He's actually in my research program, and he's taken on a research study where he's investigating how stress levels relate to academic performance. We have a lot of great research ideas that these students have generated, and again, similar to the youth and government program. It's all student interest that has brought this to light. Now, I will say this. Most students are told to complete this handout or do this one task and you're done. So if there is a difficult part of research, it's probably coming up with something you're actually interested in studying. You know, and some of the students find that to be a little difficult. Sometimes we meander through and change our focus a little bit. But one thing I will say, and actually is, again, back to the youth and government, they talked about a bill where they were proposing to eliminate tackling from middle school football as a relation to concussion. I had a student who had a concussion, bless you, and related to the concussions, there's baseline exams, bless you, and how those baseline exams relate to diagnosis of concussion. So again, another student-related idea from personal experience that's related to research. So to that end, one of the things that we're trying to do is kind of create an environment where these students are not only taking the things that are relevant to their life, and that apply to, you know, our community and our society, but also ways to try to connect that back to the community that we live in. So as you guys see up here, there's a handful of things that as we've been going through the research, based on the topics that the students have self-selected, it's kind of led me to kind of go back through and say, all right, here's the topics they're interested in. How can I help to foster their research interests? How can I help to further what their research opportunities are going to be?
How many students do you have right now that are doing research projects?
16 different research students. Yeah, 16 students. So one of these 16 students that you see up here is kind of an overview of the different areas of interest. Up at the top, I'll say, to start off, I have certain engineering partnerships up there. Someone who's a Semirich's member, they own a company that produces alternators. Well, alternators are just a way for you to take mechanical energy and convert it to electrical energy. So those are components that are used regularly in renewable energy projects. I have two students right now who are undertaking renewable energy type of projects. One is, it kind of sounds funny, but it's a great idea. It's a pedal-powered refrigeration system. You know, why would you want that? So as we're talking about ideas and, you know, how is that relevant, they said, well, we lost power during Hurricane Sandy. We didn't have power for a week and a half. So, I mean, you know, one of the biggest issues you face in a situation like that, you can't watch TV. Yeah, it's inconvenient, but refrigeration of food and stuff like that, that's critical. Medications, anyone who's diabetic, stuff like that. So that was their idea. I said, okay, let me see what I can do to make that work. So, you know, we have a company, you know, community residents who are willing to support the cause and donate some resources so that we can undertake those projects. Another one is a wind energy related project. You know, and again, same story. You're going to need an alternator because that is something that you use, you know, to harness that energy that's in the wind and convert it to electrical power. So, another company up there also supporting the wind energy initiative, Orbital ATK. That's actually a personal contact of mine, a company I used to work for. They do a lot of CNC fabrication, all sorts of hypersonic parts for the aerospace industry. So I was able to speak with a couple of their officers, the CEO there, and they also have a community outreach coordinator who's willing to work with me and try to help support the whole STEM initiative here at the high school level. And one of the ways that we're discussing and trying to facilitate that is to have them actually, for free, manufacture these parts that our students design for their renewable energy project. So that's from our energy partners there, or I should say engineering partners. Another group of students that I have related to the environmental science field. So up at the top, I read this article related to an agricultural education program that's being created up at Matatuck. Immediately said, I have to go see this firsthand. So went up there, took a tour of it. Awesome, awesome program they have going there. So what I did was I reached out to them because there were a few aspects of their program that kind of overlap and intersect with the things that we're looking to do here at San Marisha. So, for example, one of the things that they're doing is aquaculture, and they have a whole hydroponic grow system set up. So I have a team of two students who's looking to use, and there's actually a couple connections up here. These two students are looking to use plants to filter water. And it sounds like a really kind of crunchy organic thing, but we want to take it to like a real scientific level, which is to actually analyze three different plant species and to see the rate at which they're able to removing nitrogen from our water. And so any of you who are familiar with fish die-offs that occur in the Mauritius Bay, Shinnecock Inlet, that kind of thing, it's all related to high nitrogen levels. You have these high nitrates. They all come from fertilizer runoff and stuff like that. So these students said, well, what if there's a way that we can kind of battle this in a natural way, in a sustainable and a renewable way, where we can just introduce new aquatic plant species to the area to help it scrub our local environment and our local waters with nitrogen. Great idea. So that's part of the agricultural education program. And you even see Cornell Cooperative Extension. Mark Capolino is one of their educators up there who I've been in contact with directly related to this. He actually has a program where he goes around and he helps to design and install rain gardens. And the purpose of the rain garden is just that, to help filter rain runoff. So, you know, my students are like, oh, we want to do something like this here. So a lot of good stuff going on there. The next bullet down, you'll see that we have a couple of marine biology related partners, so Long Island Aquarium. Colette Ferraro over there is the one who runs the internship opportunities and also educational outreach. Last Monday, we actually got to take a tour. We got a whole behind-the-scenes tour, the back end. You know, you go to the aquarium, you see all the beautiful tanks, everything's up and running. But there's all sorts of science behind the scenes that makes that happen. Everything from cultivation of fish and raising. They have a whole fish nursery for all the different fish that they have going there. Part of that fish nursery, they actually have to feed these baby fish with algae because they're too small to eat larger organisms. Well, related to that, I have a student who's looking to use cyanobacteria for oxygenation of non-oxygenated environments. Scientists believe that's one of the ways that our Earth became oxygenated, the great oxygenation event. So he saw this and said, okay, well, as we're in there, he's seeing these tanks of algae, and he said, hey, that's related to the research that I could do. So I've been in touch with them trying to facilitate a way for him to get up there and learn some of the algal culture techniques that they're utilizing. So that's the Long Island Aquarium. Mauritius Bay Project, as it turns out, they have a new program that they just rolled out. It's called the MBOS, Mauritius Bay Observation System. So the coordinator for their water quality monitoring is actually the science research coordinator over at William Floyd. I've been in touch with her many times. We've collaborated on a couple different things. She's actually certified in a technique that I'm planning on going this summer for through Brookhaven National Labs, Stony Brook, and Cold Spring Harbor for barcoding and DNA sequencing, another opportunity for the students. So she's been trained in this technique. I reached out to her because I knew she had been trained, and we got to talking about Mauritius Bay projects. So she said, hey, come down, get involved. So related to that, I have a student who's looking to investigate how the spacing of baby oysters, they call them spat, how the spacing of those oysters impacts the rate at which they grow. If we know that you could space oysters out more and they grow faster, or keep them clustered together and they grow faster, that's beneficial in a lot of different ways. First, to people who cultivate oysters for production. You know, there's a lot of different oyster farms that are starting to pop up. So knowing the best and most efficient cultivation techniques is beneficial for them financially. But also from our environmental standpoint, oysters filter up to 50 gallons of water a day. So the more oysters you're able to cultivate and get out in the bay, the cleaner our waters in the bay. All right, so another great idea there. And again, all student-driven. I have no hand in determining what direction these students are going to go. From there, at the very bottom, you see some science research partners there. So the successful high school programs, I'll jump to that one. I've gone to visit COMAC, ISLIP again, William Floyd. Just been, you know, reaching out to as many people as I can. On the upside, the research-related area, especially at the high school level, it's a pretty small and tight-knit community. So, you know, you get on the phone, you shoot an email, and people are pretty quick to get back to you. They're willing to help out however they can, whether it's from a resources standpoint, whether it's, hey, I have a contact here, I'll put you in touch. You know, so it's a great group of people. I'm trying to, actually this past weekend I was at a Physics Teachers Association conference. I'm trying to find some for science research teachers. I don't necessarily know that there is one, so. But that's something that I'm, you know, looking to get involved in because, again, you know, the more people you know, the more you're able to facilitate this type of research work. And then you have the last one, Brookhaven National Lab, again, being right up the road. I've spoken to Dr. Alieta Perez, who runs, she's one of the science educators there. And she kind of oversees certain aspects of their research programs. They have a STEM prep program for ninth graders. And then they have a research program for 11th and 12th graders. I said to her, okay, what about our sophomores? Well, currently we don't have anything. So I said, okay, we'll try to find something else for them to do. But, you know, so those opportunities are out there, especially the 11th and 12th grade. And, I'm optimistic about that because my current group of sophomores, next year they will be seniors. They'll be eligible for this type of research program between their junior and senior year. And based on what I'm seeing from these students, they have a level of maturity and seriousness that I believe will make them very successful in a program like that. I don't think they'll go and just to say they're going. A lot of these kids aren't really saying, well, I'm doing it for a college resume. They're doing it because they're interested, and it's authentic, you know, interest. So.
16 is incredible.
Yeah.
At a small school, I am...
William Floyd's program is 24, and they're just...
I'm stunned at 16.
One of the things we need to stress is 16 pretty much just made up of 9th and 10th graders. Right. The first year, we introduced the program just to 9th and 10th because we wanted to be able to work with students at least 2 to 3 years to culminate a final project that might be submitted to like a CMIN's national contest. So it's 16 of 9th and 10th graders. So next year when we roll out the program to 9th graders, the 16 will continue and will grow.
So it's like a 32-person full program?
Excuse me?
Once you're rolled out to 9th and 10th and you're... Currently, all seniors, you're looking at about 32, 35.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's great. I mean, so a couple questions. Any plans to expand this into kind of a contact in the medical field, hospital,
yes.
File?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's one I've been working on. So one of my students is interested in doing research related to infectious diseases and how they spread. So there was research that was recently done where this kind of overlays into a couple different areas. There was a study done to see the number of different organisms, microorganisms present in subway stations. So they pretty much went around and took swab samples of every subway station in Manhattan. And then using the data, what they did was they took their swab samples, they cultured all the samples, they sent those cultures off for DNA sequencing, and from there they're able to determine exactly what strains of what microorganism they had, what's infectious, what isn't. It turns out, and you guys will all rest easy, the majority of the stuff they found was totally benign. It was regular. You know, there's bacteria on our skin. Most of it was just regular skin bacteria, not a big deal. But there were several stations where they found some, you know, kind of nasty stuff. So it was cool because there's a software program that I have... couple of my students starting up with. It's called ArcGIS, and pretty much what it allows you to do is to create your own maps. It almost looks like a temperature map. You know, red would be hot, blue would be cold. Well, the stations where there's a lot of microorganisms are red, there's a lot going on, the cold ones being blue, where there's not much going on. And it's nice to be able to visualize data in that way because it allows you to identify trends that just staring at a bunch of numbers on a spreadsheet, you might not see. You know, so it's a way of investigating that kind of thing. So this student said, well, maybe I could do a research study that's kind of related to that. And her current proposed research, she wants to go take swab samples. You know, we said out here, well, what's a place people go to quite often? Where do you stop in the morning for a cup of coffee? 7-Elevens. So she said, what if I swab a bunch of 7-Elevens all around Suffolk County? Are the ones near hospitals, are they going to have more diseases present? I said, I don't know. Let's give it a shot and see what happens. You know, great idea, and that was all. Nice. You know, So
how does she grow that out? Like, is there?
So we're going to have to go through and do the actual cultures, swab samples. You have to, you have to incubate the stuff, let it grow. From there, and this is where things get a little difficult. So the researchers from the one study to sequence all those different samples, $350 a pop. They'll open up their lab. You can send the cultures, but it could be costly. You know, so we're going to have to come up with an
alternative. Another way, absolutely, you can get to kind of donate the time and teach.
Potentially, and that's one of the things, you know, when there's, you know, if it's a financial restriction, then I'm pounding the pavement and the keyboard trying to find alternatives, you know.
I was just going to say, you're good at really pushing and getting people to push.
There you go. We're late on YouTube. Yeah.
So do they go through the summer? How do they stop in the summer? What
so happens? Really, my thought would be, and if anything, next year is going to be nice because I already have students going, this is great, they're loving what they're doing, and at the same time, now that they're kind of viewing the world through the research lens, they're going, oh, I could do this too. And I said, don't forget it, jot it down, that's a note to yourself, because over the summer, that's going to be you know, for students who aren't engaged in some type of research program, go get involved in some other type of program. And if you can't find something else to be active in, like Merchants Bay Project's a great one, and I have some students who are involved in that. But get involved somewhere. And if you're not doing something, brainstorm research ideas. Because if you can come in the first day of school and already know with reasonable certainty what it is you want to research, you pretty much hit the ground running. And that's kind of, you know, one of the things that I've been stressing to the students.
So it's like September, October, when's a good time to have someone come in and present what they're doing, you know, whatever stage it might be?
Wait, so of the students you're saying?
Yeah.
I mean, assuming that they're going to start right in September, and one of the things, like the process that we're in right now is, you know, allocating the resources and getting the right pieces and the right equipment and everyone set up with that stuff. And again, because we kind of got this off the ground a little bit late in this school year, we're a little behind the curve on that. You know, but my estimation would be, and I know most programs, especially from a top level, a lot of the more competitive programs have their competitions in March. So usually your project is completed by, I'm going to say, probably the February time frame, somewhere in that ballpark.
So it might be interesting if we had some ideas of what they, you know, a couple of, one or two or three,
that's,
to hear what we want to do?
Yes. So, and if you want, that's something, you know, I'm kind of upset that Matt ran out. Matt's, you know, Matt Plastrick, an outstanding student, all around great student. They really all are. You know, but I saw Matt.
It's a good opportunity for them to be excited
absolutely.
About it, come here, community, see
absolutely.
What's going on.
And so, so that's something that we'll definitely set up. And again, as they hash out exactly what their research areas are going to be, maybe we'll do that. Maybe I'll make them, you know, tell them, hey, for your proposal, don't sell me. You have to sell everyone else on it.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, the same thing goes for the science research program. You know, the Board of Education, this Board of Education here, just like the support you gave for the youth and government, not only for the high school, but now hopefully for the middle school as we get into next month, unless Governor Cuomo doesn't give us more funds. The same thing here. You know, here was something that, you know, was a vision, I think, of all of us. It was the board and administration together who wanted to get this off the ground. But it came in the fall, and it was one of those tough ones that the board had to struggle with, and we got a unanimous decision led by Mr. Foster to do this. And if you look at, you know, even Ms. Petandra, the articles that she wrote, and I would encourage everybody to read those articles in this last district news, because it kind of shows some of the things that are happening. And unless you see the students, and I think it's a great idea, Josh, to bring those students next time, because I think the same excitement you saw from the youth in government, you will certainly see they come and present. And I think we should bring them in October, maybe as end of September. I don't know, Mr. Sawyer, so you can decide that, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think that would be great to see them present. Okay. Are you hitting this, Carol?
Yeah.
So we're here to do an overview of the revenue and the expenditures. And we left off on the last meeting, which was, I believe it was in March, right? March 22nd, right? So we, can you hit the count for a slide? So we're here on March 22nd, and Ms. Perkins announced or presented to all of us the New York State tax cap calculation for Center Bridges, which at the time was a 2.31. I believe that went to submit it to New York State actually before that, on March 1st, right? That we had to submit that. But we wanted to send that and present that or announce that, and Carol did that at our last meeting. Tonight, you're going to see that the administration's recommendation for the 17-18 tax levy equates to exactly that to the New York State tax cap calculation. And you're going to see throughout tonight in our presentation that we are recommending the 2.31 for the tax levy for the 17-18 school district. You will note also that there were four financial goals that the Board of Education, we're going to talk about that tonight, it's going to be within many of the slides, but there were four specific financial goals that the Board of Education gave us, kind of our guide, last summer, right? I think it was probably in July, maybe August, in that area. So as we moved forward, we basically use that as our guide and as we put together this budget. So The first one that I'm just going to talk about, and you'll see it up here, the first goal, and actually this has been the goal for the past 3 years from the Board of Education. The Board of Education has been steadfast and unanimous on this goal, is although, you know, there is a tax cap by New York State, the board has been very clear to all of us to say, look, you know, we want the budget to be limited to be more conservative than New York State. That being said, we do not want to see the support for general operating expenses to be over 1.5%. And tonight, you're going to see that in our presentation. So out of the 2.31%, we have achieved goal number one of the Board of Education to limit it to 1.50%. The board also said for the last 3 years that we were also had the ability, if we were going to go over 1.5, that they gave us a cap and said, you're never going to go over 2.0, but if you're going to attempt to go over 1.5, you can go up to 2.0, but make sure that that requires academic growth, and you're going to have to present that to the Board of Education and show that that is something that is directly tied into academic growth. And tonight, we're going to show you a little less than last year. Remember, last year, we actually put 0.50% out there. This year, we're going to put a 0.14%, which is about $30,000, something in that nature. And we're going to present to you tonight of why we are recommending that additional academic growth. And lastly, this is something that's already has been approved by the community, but I wanted it noted that the additional 0.67% that's there is already been a voter-approved capital project debt service.
It's crazy that that's in the cap. It like blows my mind that you have a separate vote and it's approved and it's in the cap, you know?
And last year, if you remember, that was a 0.35. So now as we head towards phase two, because last year we only had the borrowing from phase one, now we're going to have to add phase two, which again was a great article. Ms. Angel talked about that, and now, you know, working with phase two, that has now gone to a 0.67. So I just wanted the board to kind of see the breakdown, and as you can see in this, we did accomplish goal number one set forth by the Board of Education. Okay, so now we're on the expense side of the budget. And this is the one, Carol, I'll let you talk about most of this, but you know, this is the one that's quite dicey. Because here we are, and I'm sure everybody in the room has been reading the local news. I know Newsday ran articles probably two or three times today. The New York Times has, you know, there are articles and articles talking about this right now, the state, and the state actually passing a budget so all of us can be prepared. And Wendy, you'll remember the years when they didn't do it by April 1st. But since I've been here in Center Bridges, you know, I'm going to pat the governor and the state on the back, because since I've been here, they have come with a budget before April 1st, and we've been, you know, well prepared with the numbers. We knew exactly what they are. And when, you know, when you're in the game of the guessing game of what you think you're going to get, and putting together a presentation for the Board of Education is very difficult. Although I have an expert here and who is data-driven and looks at things historically, and I think her numbers have been spot on over the years, I think this year probably is going to be the most difficult. And there was one specific line in Newsday today that kind of threw me off a little bit, because if you remember what some of the updates that I do send you, we were predicting, or Carol was predicting, we're a team, we locked arms on this, and we were predicting about an additional $56,000 over what the Governor Cuomo proposed for us. And we were pretty steadfast in that thought. We were strong and we felt comfortable. And there was one line in Newsday today that kind of said to us, well, maybe not so much. That might not happen. Because we were looking at the total number, and it's still not finalized, and we were looking at how many schools are actually in New York State. And we started to do division, and it didn't come up to 56,000. Now, we could be wrong. So, again, they're still working on it. We were hoping by tonight, and even during this meeting, if it changes, I'm on my phone waiting for the runs to come. And if they do come, I'm going to announce it here tonight. But as of right now, we do not have that number. You will notice on that salary line, that's the one line I just want to touch upon, because in the salary line, you'll see that $313,000 increase. And, you know, most of the times, that entire increase is with all the contract obligations, right? And That's not so this year, because that $313,000 also takes into account the accessing due to enrollment. Our recommendation is to access two elementary student schools, teachers, and that isn't enrollment driven. That's not something that we would recommend unless the enrollment has gone down. And we do have the numbers for the board or the community. I think you've seen some of them. And
that was
also
based on the presentation that Ricardo provided,
yeah,
with enrollment
right.
numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, we can also update you up to today. There's things, you know, that are fluid, but for the most part, the numbers are pretty close to the same as when Ricardo presented to you. So that includes in there those two, as well as we had a retirement, if you remember, mid-year. We are still interviewing for that position, and we'll only present to the board a candidate that we feel is worthy of seven ridges and can really add to our program. We haven't gotten there yet, and we are on the second round of doing that. But that takes into account those three numbers, the accessing of two teachers, as well as the retirement. So out of that, there's an additional $206,000 that actually, if it was just the contractual obligations, you know, would be around $519,000, but because of those reasons, it's not.
Which would be almost 4.5% or 5% on that number.
Correct.
So $21 million, so we're still at about a point and a half. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, 1.5% to almost 2%.
Yeah. So I just wanted you to be aware of that, because sometimes you'd say, oh, we only went up that amount, what does that mean, and so on. So, but I just wanted you to be aware of the, you know, due to the decrease in enrollment as well as the retirement. And I can do less than 2 minutes.
Can I go?
No.
Go ahead. Okay.
This one, Carol, just explain, because each one, some of them are very simplistic, obviously. Others have a few items that are, you know, like contractual. I know there are three or four items in that number, as well as BOCES, debt services is pretty much phase two. But if you could just go through each one just quickly and tell us why that increased.
Sure.
The
first is equipment. There's an increase of $13,250. And that has to do with the replacement. A large amount is due to the replacement of musical instruments. Every year we look at our inventory. It's an aging inventory, and each year we try to replace some of the instruments. So that's one of the increases. The other is we have a new AP computer science class, and also a new Excelsior first aid and CPR class. There's two of them. And equipment is required for both of those. So that's that increase. Transportation, increase of $50,000. That's due to an additional van this year. And also field trips. There was an increase in field trips. And as Mr. Stewart had mentioned before during Ms. Hessian's presentation, we've allocated money for college field trips. Contractual increase of $100,000.
So just back up for a second. How much of that 50 is field trips in college versus regular?
That's only several thousand dollars. The majority of that's going to be an additional van, and that's on need of a child in the school district.
Okay.
So the majority of that.
But the reason I ask is that your car?
My car?
The reason I ask is because the Attleworth contract realized significant savings.
Yes.
Do you have a sense, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you have a sense of, I know that was 3 months ago when we signed that.
Well, I know one of the credit was increased from $96,000 to $120,000.
Right.
And in addition to that, there was no increase. And
So it's net like $25,000 savings for next year.
And please, you know, you know that. And you also got an additional, the same reduction we were getting all those years, which was substantial at the time,
yes.
You were able to continue to do.
And increase it.
That was a cost.
So notwithstanding that savings.
You're right. It would be 75 or 80.
Okay.
Yes.
And sometimes that happens, but some of it is for the growth, i.e. trips.
Yeah,
field trips,
some
and some of it
smaller,
is specific student related. Okay.
Yes.
Next are the contractual increases of $128,000. That was attributed to insurance, professional development. It was also contributed to utilities such as water, and we also have a district-wide program for the replacement of shades within the elementary and secondary buildings, and also univentilator repair.
So that's in the contractual, the shades and univent are contractual?
They're not contractual.
But that's in the contractual line item?
It's contractual expense.
Okay. Yeah, it's in our five-year plan, like the unit ventilators, just to give you the amount, like that's about $30,000.
Right.
We plan to do that for the next 4 or 5 years. The shades are expensive as well. We've talked a lot about that with intruding drills and sheltering drills, the importance of having shades that do the right thing and make sure they're working and they darken the room and so on. So I don't know, that's probably $10,000 or $11,000 in the shades alone. And then those are 5-year plans.
Right. And then lastly,
but those are items when in Gary Crowell's maintenance plan, his 5-year maintenance plan, those are items that were top of the list in that maintenance
plan.
Exactly. Okay. And last but not least, under contractual will be also special ed services.
Can I speak to that?
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Special ed services in terms of related services. We have internal personnel that, for the most part, conduct a lot of our remediation services. But there are some remediation services, such as OT, PT, some speech to a degree, that we don't have licensed individuals in-house to service our students. So we do contract for those services. I want to thank the board and the community for their continued support of our students that require these remediation services. Sometimes the remediation services, and I just want to say in terms of contractual, it is an increase of $35,000 next year. 10 happens to be for in-house students, 25 happens to be for parochial, the two parochial schools that we have in district, Lady Queen of Apostle and Leonard E. Burkett. As part of New York State sort of mandated obligations, the school district has to support the special education needs of the parochial schools that reside in their district. So despite the fact that there are students that attend Our Lady Queen of Apostle and Leonard E. Burkett that come from different districts, it is our responsibility to chair the CSE meetings and to provide them with support.
We get reimbursed.
100%. We get reimbursed the following year for whatever expenses we expend for the students that are not St. Lurcher students. But going back to the $35,000, like I said, the board, the community has been very gracious in allowing us to basically support the remediation supports that students need. And they come from various ways. One, they come through a source of CSE, which is Committee on Special Education. Committees meet, they conduct evaluations. The evaluations identify deficits found in the child in whatever particular area that they're evaluating. As a result of that, recommendations are made for services. We have to pay for those services. Those services generally are based on the deficits found and what clinicians believe, based on the data, is the preferred level of service based on duration and frequency. Now, with that, we have to, as I said a moment ago, we have to contract for OT, PT, and some speech to some degree. Like I said, the board has been very gracious to support that. On this agenda, you actually have a transfer item for those services. What happens is that in the sort of the field of special education, we try to estimate what are our increases or what are projected expenditures for the following year based on the data points that we have available when we create the budget. Now, as a result of what happens during CSE meetings, we also support IST support. There's IST, which is the instruction support team, which is functions at the elementary, at the secondary complex. The language changes to child study team. It's the same premise, which is the RTI process, which is response to intervention, which as a school district, we are mandated to support our students if we identify a deficit that remediation can support. It is strictly, from the IST point of view, it is time-based, meaning you could have it for a duration of 6 months, you could have it for a duration of a year, 2 years, whatever is needed for that particular student to close the achievement gaps. That's the purpose of RTI. to try to remediate whatever deficit is found to try to minimize those achievement gaps in the hopes that the student will catch up. And the deficits won't necessarily affect their growth or their achievement as they go through our system. So, Kara, I just wanted to kind of stress the importance of that $35,000. And once again, thank you for...
So let me ask a quick question, though. So
yes, please.
All that makes absolute sense. You know, we have, you know, educational, legal, moral obligations to remediate. Are we looking at each of those contracts with the third-party clinicians to ensure that we're getting the absolute best rates we can, like we've done with other...
We do.
Well, at one point, just
to give you an example, Josh, our current rate of our fee schedule that we have with the company that we contract for the remedial services, they are at this point about 30 to 40% lower than some of the other competing agencies around us. Every year I get proposals for our, you know, business in terms of related service.
We're going out
Yes. And every year we go out and we receive these, you know, proposals that have attached fee schedules. To date, I have yet to see a fee schedule that is competitive to the agency we currently use.
Okay. Which we're confident on the flip side of that, we're confident the agency that we currently use provides
superb services. Absolutely.
We've switched, so you should know during the last 5 years we have made switches.
We have.
And it was not, although it financially worked out well, we did it for, we thought it was the best interest for the children of the services we were getting. In addition, when we first, I believe, 5-6 years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, we actually did this in-house. It's one of those rare moments that I can remember that we actually had people who were working here for us, but it cost us a lot more than having some of the services.
In the area of speech and language,
we did.
A couple of years ago, we made a recommendation to the Board of Education as one speech pathologist retired, not to replace her and have those services absorbed by this third-party agency. We saved roughly about $50,000 a year as a result of that savings, as a result of that decision to not hire the third speech pathologist.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
That was good. Thank you.
Supplies is an increase of $15,905, and that has to do with instructional program supplies necessary for that. And also, we have a contract with the state, between the school district, Native Americans, and the state. And part of that contract is that we have to provide an increase in supplies, and that includes that. Tuition, just a slight increase. It's contractual. No increase in textbooks, workbooks. BOCES, there's an increase of $59,790. And that has to do with we had to bring in Microsoft licensing under the BOCES. And also it includes the increases in associated with all the programs and services that BOCES provides.
Microsoft licensing for what?
At one point, we got it for free, I believe, and then all
we
of a sudden, yeah, and then this year we had to spend
a fee.
You're talking about like Outlook and Word and things like that, like your software programs.
Yeah, we're talking about the email service that we currently use, like Microsoft. We're also referring to other
software, like SQL servers for like your main servers.
Yes. Yes.
That also includes, right, the arts and education. We continue to increase money there.
Yes.
The HERMA, BOCES, a lot of BOCES, yeah. Right?
Yes. A lot of it, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Next debt service, as we spoke about that, the increase is due to phase two of the capital project.
So if you look at, just so that I'm clear, if you look at that increase in debt service, does that approximately equal the 0.67%?
0.67%. We added another $75,000 to it, and we added another $75,000. So last year we had $75,000 for phase one. This year we put in $150,000 that went into phase one, phase two, borrowing.
Phase one's already built.
Right.
Phase one's built.
It's representative of 0.32.
0.32, so I'm just trying to understand. You have 0.67 voter-approved capital project debt service. That's an increase this year.
That's the way it's figured on the tax. On tax levy, that's the way it's figured.
Because it's half, because the levy is half, and here we're looking at a total budget number, so it's...
Correct.
Yes.
That's
correct. So, so in fairness, that $80,000... if it all came out of the tax levy increase, is that 0.67?
Mm-hmm.
Am I thinking about that right?
Yes.
Okay.
A little bit less. Yes.
All right.
Okay. Employee benefits. The employee benefits includes your teacher's retirement system, employee retirement system, your Social Security, workers' comp, things like that. But the major increase under employee benefits is health insurance. This year, 16-17, back when we had prepared the budget, we used a rate that was lower than it actually came in at. All the districts were surprised that we had increased the rates so much. So it takes that into account, and also the increase that we anticipate for 17-18.
Which is what?
Anywhere from 8 to 10%.
And this year was 18?
No, this year was went up to 13%.
13% increase this year, and next year you're thinking 8 to 10?
8 to 10.
And is that kind of like the best thinking of business officials, or is that...
No, they recently came out with a quarterly report, and so they have their worst outlook, the best, and
it's like a hurricane track.
Yeah.
So is this 8 or 10? Is the 380 8 or 10?
I've included 8%. And
because we think that going to be, like, what's the basis for the 8 versus the 10, because the 2% light is...
Yeah, if I put in 10% and if balancing the budget, you might have to reduce something. I'd rather using the 8%, because for the most part it has come in around that or less. I wouldn't want to cut the program and end up with...
So if it comes in at 10 and you're 2% light, what happens?
It's roughly about $60,000, and I'd have to find that elsewhere.
And it's payable when? How is that? Is that just something where you'd say next budget cycle?
I mean, this year is the perfect example.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
If I'm wrong, we just did exactly that, mm-hmm. and we find it and transfer something in the other line.
Right.
I think the big point Carol's making to me was that when I was talking to her about this is, you know, do we really believe it will come in at 8? The answer is yes, because of all the years before. You know, 8 to 10, you know, it could come in at 10. This year it came in, and all the officials were at that number,
yeah.
and we had to figure it out, which we did.
Is there anything else that any other district on Long Island is doing for health care? Any district on Long Island self-insured?
Right next door, William Floyd is self-insured. It is a major, major problem right now, what's going on at William Floyd. If anybody's watching them closely, just go on to one of their budget audios. There are self insured.
What's the problem?
The problem is that if you get several people that work for you who have catastrophic diseases,
yeah,
such as Guillain-Barré, or if you have some type of a heart problem, and you kind of play in a numbers game. And you know, they look at all the data and they say, well, we believe this is going to happen. If that doesn't happen, you have a major problem. They've just, William Floyd recently, I believe they just dropped their carrier, their self-insured carrier, I believe.
How much of this $10 million is insurance cost?
About $4 million or so.
Can we have at some point, I don't know if tonight's the right time to ask for this or not, but an insurance administrator, maybe their guy, maybe somebody else, come in and just talk to us about it, have them have some of our data? I just want to hear, you know, I know you guys looked at it 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
No, absolutely.
And maybe they are having huge problems, and maybe I just want to hear from someone that walks through and says, here's what it would be.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
There are other plans out there, East End Health Plan, Suffolk, I think, Water 2 or something.
We can certainly bring, we'll bring if you want one, we can bring somebody in. They can sit you through the entire public and show you several different types of plans.
But I want to do it early enough so that, I don't need to cut you off, but early enough so that if there is savings to be achieved, we can do it next year. I don't. I think there's a date in the summer where there's, and I get we have to talk to the unions. I understand all that.
Right,
it's
in the CBA.
I got it.
Okay.
But
yeah,
if we can save $1 million and the coverage is the same, you know.
Yeah. Right now, I can tell you what we have here right now. From my experience of talking to all the superintendents, we definitely have a very good company.
So can we though do it? I hear you.
You want to see that?
I want to see an administrator come in who can tell us approximately what it would cost in June.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. The last component of the budget is transfer to other funds. Last year, it was reduced by $200,000. We had middle school bleachers. This year, we have $70,000 allocated for transfer to other funds. That includes $20,000 for the summer special ed program. We contribute 20% of the federal government and state. Contributes 80%, and it also includes $50,000 for the care reserve, for a total budget of $42,076,368, which equates to a 2.05% increase.
Okay, so now when Carol speaks about the state aid, once again, just remember that, you know, all the districts, every district on Long Island and New York State right now have incomplete data. So that state aid is reflecting is an additional $56,000, that we are predicting, hopefully predicting, maybe tonight or tomorrow, that's over the governor's proposal. You will note that on the 19th of April is basically when the board adopts the budget. You have to do that by New York State law. We have to get it to the comptroller, I believe, on the 21st, on April 21st. So that's not something that we cannot do. What we will do, if the number comes in less than $56,000, we will be at our next meeting, and we will tell you or give you some of our recommendations.
So 339,667 includes $56,000, I'm not sure.
Correct. As they duke it out, the governor and the legislators and negotiate, more to come.
Yeah.
And we will certainly tell you that. I just wanted you to be aware of that when you look at state aid. Tuition.
Okay. I went over this slide last presentation, but I'll go over it again. I'll go over it quickly. Another source of revenue is a tuition. And we get our tuition from three sources. We get Native American students. We get it from our special ed program. We have students attending our program from other districts, so we bill it out for tuition. And also for our East Meridian students, those students who select St. Meridian as a school of choice. And we are estimating an increase of $141,000 in tuition. We have our interest.
How much of that is locked up? How confident are we in that 141? Is that people that have committed from ESM?
Yes.
Yes.
Special ed who's committed to come?
Yes, very confident.
Is there any, there's an additional four in this number that haven't committed yet?
Not that haven't committed, but we historically we do see movement throughout the summer. If I had to guess, I'm going to guess that number's going to go up. But we can never guarantee that.
I know. But the 141 additional, or the 5572, yep. 203, is in the bank.
Correct.
Okay. So then what are we going to do to get that number up? Is there anything we can do between now and then to increase revenue through tuition?
We look closely at our 811 classes. We keep them to 7, as you know, because we have room for anybody that moves into St. Meridian's. We certainly continue to reach out to East Meridian's, and we talk to their counselors, who we have a very good relationship with, and superintendent, and make sure that if any students are wavering on their decision that they already made, we did have one recently, and I think I sent that to the Board of Education, so we'll continue to do that. The Native American is a number. It's a pretty, flat number, the Native American.
Yeah.
We know how many are on the reservation, and so...
Our health contract is $150,000. That is We provide services to private and parochial schools, and the students that attend private and parochial schools from other districts, we then bill out those health services to those districts. Other income includes things such as lost textbook money. It includes parentally placed, as Mr. Soto was mentioning before, about the services that we provide to students in private and privileged schools. We bill it out in the form of parentally placed revenue. It also includes Medicaid and also reimbursement and various other types of revenue.
Is this where the grant money and grant money was held?
No, grant money is separate. Grant money is in a different fund. It's not under the general fund. Okay. Other reserves, it's reduced by 150. That was due to last year the middle school bleachers, slides, fund balance, no change. And then the tax levy, as Mr. Stewart has presented.
Hey, the money back on that, on those bleachers, where does that show up?
It would show when it appears. It would show up under Building 8, under State 8.
So does your 339667 include any of that?
No, because that wasn't projected. You look at the Building 8 numbers, and that wasn't included.
I don't understand. Is it a guarantee that we get 68% of that 150 back?
Right, but the Building 8 number is based on they do their calculation, and I have to their number, and it wasn't appearing under.
Is this money that we're going to get, though?
We're supposed to get it, yeah.
Well, when and it's 20-year?
It's on 15-year.
So it's supposed to be 10,000? No, it's supposed to be like 7,000. Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. So as we look at this, it's 1.32 coming from reserve between the other reserve, the ERS, TRS, and the applied fund balance, correct?
The 121 is from the employee retirement reserve, and the 1.2 is the applied fund balance.
So, and if we forecast, that leaves the general fund balance at approximately?
Altogether, about $6 million. That includes everything.
But on a percentage
basis?
No, but the general fund on a percentage basis is approximately 4% of the budget?
4%, yes.
Yeah. And is that after applying this 1.2?
That's over and above.
Right.
Right.
So we apply that. What I'm trying to, I may not be asking the right question, but.
It would be the same.
That's the question. Yeah. The bank account is the same at the end based on your forecast for surplus versus the
only way it would change is on the actual surplus as we head towards the end of the school year, and when the books are finally balanced, over the years we have been above, and we hope to have that again.
But as of the data that we sent home on Friday, it's about what we expect it to be.
Exactly. So we'll be the same, and we're staying within that form.
Okay.
So, Raymond, if you don't mind, I spoke about the 0.14 before. The numbers there, 30,437, and basically. Brandon, just to speak shortly about that and where we're going to have our growth.
Sure. As Mr. Stewart mentioned, this piece of the proposed tax levy, last year we had, for example, the, part-time low teacher. This year, the amount is significantly lower. 0.14% equates to about $30,000. But however, perfect timing if you witness some of you witnessed the presentations earlier this evening. For the 17-18 school year, we're really focusing on layering our enrichment, our extracurricular programs to enhance what we already have. For example, if you recall to the administrator's presentation of the five-year plan, there is a proposal for a book club. There's a proposal for a series about science. And really just expanding the current opportunities we have based on student interests, based on what we know we don't currently have, and which also includes expanding youth in government to the middle school. And when, we talk about these experiences for kids, and you saw it tonight, often, we you know, are always, of course, looking to increase are during the school day academic programs, but it's so typical, as we've seen, that the culmination, the real-life experiences happen during those enrichment after-school programs. So, you know, it's to me, and I know the administrators would agree, it's all about, you know, continuing to include layers, even if it's $30,000 worth of layers in a $42 million budget. You know, so that $30,000, I don't think we can get through a budget presentation without using that term that Mr. Stewart loves, you know, that phrase, bang for your buck. You know, so we're always focused on trying to add these layers, optimizing student opportunities, but also monitoring, are these student opportunities taken advantage of? You know, for example, another piece of this $30,000 is continuing to expand robotics, you know, adding our two assistant robotics advisors because our robotics numbers continue to go up. And, you know, a few board meetings ago, we had a robotics presentation that really demonstrated the enthusiasm. I mean, the room was packed. You couldn't move because you had these huge robotics teams in here. So those for those programs to continue to be successful, layering additional advisors is really essential for that. So, you know, at the end of the day, the bottom line is when you increase your opportunities and different avenues for students, every time you capture a new group of students, and even if it's something very traditional and old school like a book club, you know, you capture that group that had not maybe been captured before. And, you know, you have now a new set, a new outlet where those students can really benefit and they can highlight their talents and skills. And as we move forward, we really do this with all of our clubs. We monitor carefully. You know, if the club is going for 2 or 3 years and has two kids, we're going to look for another opportunity where we can, you know, continue to maximize the enrichment program. So,
you'll replace one club.
Right. And again, based on the interest, you know, and because things do ebb and flow. You know, if you have, like, you know, 10 kids for a book club, that's a lot. You know, it's hard to compare that to 65 kids on a robotics team. But, you know, because it's not unlimited growth, you have to continue to weigh the ebb and flow of the interest of the kids and the families in the community. So,
and that's why you want to write down the collective bargaining agreement. If you look, this board has approved, and the past board approved a lot of clubs. It doesn't mean we're running them. But we want to have the opportunity to go to the well when you need to switch. And you'll see that throughout the year. So if you have a chess club that there are only 7 or 8 students and we feel like the interest isn't there, but we have students asking for another club and they have 50 signatures who want to join this club, we'll switch at the end of the year. And that's what I allow the principals to do. In fact, the youth in government, that was not what you recommended two meetings ago until I think what happened up in Albany. Right? What did you change that? That was going to be...
It was families. And I thought of that after I saw the success of the science quiz bowl. I wanted to kind of replicate that with math. But I had, after speaking with the students at the Holder, Mr. Scavone, this was like a snippet, but for an hour they were in my office the day they got back, and the enthusiasm was just oozing out of them like we saw tonight. So I decided to push math leads off the year because we have the student interest now.
And it's not as if math leads is off the table.
Exactly.
And if you look at, say, Math Honor Society is brand new this year, that's another perfect example.
That's a perfect.
Where you think, you know, like, it just kind of evolves on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the support of these things, how they kind of naturally come up to the surface, and how the Board of Education and the community has supported these things that occur naturally here because it is, the kids are at the center of this. You know, at Math Honor Society, it's all student driven.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have this, and we should have it because. Yeah, you know, like, that's coming from that.
You all got the white shorts. I'm going to call him the Pied Piper over there. Right, Mr. Jean's very impressive, but you watch what he has done now.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went tonight to the 4th and 5th grade science research program, if you went, so all the projects over here, right, on the screen. It was unbelievable, the enthusiasm of the parents, the conversations around science.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that, you see what Mr. Turnhout's been doing, the outstanding job that he did this year with his club. You talk about the amount you can get into your program, and I'm looking at you going, well, is that a full-time job? You know, that's right up around, I was looking at you at that moment going, wow, you know, it's something that is growing, and we certainly have to embrace that. We have to figure out a way, because it is definitely growth. And what are we going to do as we move forward? So far, we've been able to do it, but all of the things you're seeing, it's we keep touching upon, the robotics. That's also, I think, believe mandatory to have those assistants.
It
now.
Is.
We have 55
yeah, that's
students.
From first robotics.
We have 55 students now.
And it's, aside from the having the the educational part of it. It is a, you know, it's a supervisory concern, you know, when you are supervising that amount of students, and they're working with tools and things of that nature. So that, I believe that's where it comes from, the mandate from FIRST Robotics. So, you know, and again, like, I really like, you know, the board's goal, the incremental, like, you can do so much incrementally, and that's kind of exactly what's happening here. So
you just, when we're looking at electives and enrichment, we talked about, you've mentioned, like, the book club, is that high school, middle school, elementary school?
Right now, it was proposed in high school, because they've actually been asking Ed for several years now for the book club, because the middle school had it, and just, you know, similarly with the opposite of youth and government, you want to build up and you want to build back.
Right.
You
try to let
it coordinate
so there's a vertical alignment there. So somebody, you know, if they start running the big club at the middle school, we thought about, you know, then adding that, layering that to the, you know, middle school and high school. Elementary school, layering it up to the middle.
That's what happens to our book club people when they get to high school. They don't find anything else. You know, I'm laughing because I'm a book club kind of person. So, yeah, I think that, and having that continuum, always thinking at the end of the day, you know, K through 12, with both, you know, in-school academic and enrichment, I think it just really makes a comprehensive educational program. So.
Yeah, very great. Thank you. Carol, I know you did the slide. I apologize. It's a funny slide.
Did you want to do the slide?
But if you could just quickly just go through
it.
Okay.
I had presented this at the last meeting. And basically, I'll just quickly go through it, is that the first line is the tax cap calculation over the past several years. The middle line is the proposed, this year it's 2.31, with voter-approved tax levy. And you can see that either we were below the tax cap or we were at equal to the tax cap. And the last line, which is really important, is the tax rate increase. You'll notice that with the exception of one year, we've been below the actual what we had estimated the tax levy to be. Because once the assessments come in, and with the exception of one year, the assessments are going up, which is growing, and therefore the tax rate goes down. So although, say, last year we proposed a 2.34, if you looked at your tax bill, it would have been a 1.97% increase. So over a five-year period, we have the average tax rate is 1.33%.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mentioned in the beginning about the Board of Education had four financial goals. I think we touched upon one of them. First slide as well as the other slides, but if you don't mind, Mr. Soto, maybe just go through these four quickly.
Absolutely.
And we are, I will say, with the budget we are presenting, the administration has accomplished all four goals.
And I think that's the highlight of this one particular slide, the fact that the administration, with the help obviously of our administrators, and of course the Board of Education, we have accomplished these goals. And they're quite astounding to really look at. And these are reflective of the Board of Education financial goals for the 17-18 school year that the Board of Education adopted. And the first part basically looks at the increase not being more than 12% aggregate, which means combined, over the course of 5 years. So I'm very proud to announce that our five-year average is 1.58%. Our five-year total is 7.94. So you can see that Board of Education community, we come way under the 12% directive or goal that the Board of Education has defined for us. And one of the things I wanted to mention is that we use the Board of Education goals as a roadmap. And this is something that Mr. Stewart mentioned. When we plan for the budget, and it seems as though whenever we begin a year, we're planning for next year's budget. Because in October, November, we begin to sit down, we look at our expenditures, we look at our staffing needs, we look at our supplies, and we begin to plan for the next year. But when we plan for the next year, we do look at the Board of Education goals in terms of student achievement goals. What are their financial goals? And we use that almost as a framework, and we use a term like in education and in popular business called backwards design, where we plan our budget based on these goals. The second item, which is the budget shall be less than or equal to 102% of the 2016-17 budget. We have a 2% tax cap, so we do remain within that 2%, even though, as Mr. Foster mentioned, that 0.67%, that is the debt service. It's kind of odd that that is part of our calculated New York State tax levy, but unfortunately it is. But when you look at the growth of the budget itself, we're at actually 1.5 and then the 0.14% for growth. So we are under that 2%. The tax levy will not increase more than 10% in the aggregate over the next 5 years. The average for that is over the 5 years is 1.9%, and the 5-year total is 9.52. 0.5 is for the debt service, so take that out in a sense, but unfortunately we can't, so it is 9.2, but we do fall under the 10%. The next item is what we kind of touched upon in the beginning, which is the tax, the 718 tax levy will be lesser of the state set tax cap or 2%. Now, what's interesting that the Board of Education has done with this is that it allowed us to make the incremental growth to our program, meaning the budget-to-budget increase will be 1.5%, but the 0.5 could be for incremental programmatic growth. Last year, we made a proposal of 0.49, which brought the budget at from 1.5 to 1.99, and then the 0.35 was contributed to the debt service, which we had a tax levy increase of 2.34. So, no, last year, 2.34. This year, it's 2.31 because it's 0.7, and we reduced the incremental growth from 0.49 to 1.14. So that's the difference.
On that second bullet, and I don't like to give Mr. Foster too much credit, but I'm going to be brutally honest here. When he first came with that 102%, and it was directly from you, Josh, Carol and I, not only we pushed against you and to your face, which I thought was very cool, but we also, behind the scenes, were not comfortable with that second one. And in the end, you know, we accepted it. I would say, I don't know if we embraced it completely, but I'd be less than honest if I didn't say that that's probably the one that I look at as a group and say, wow, we were able to accomplish that. And so,
listen, I mean, I think the one thing that's important about a goal is it's kind of along the lines of what Ricardo said. Every one of these, if you know in advance, you can take it into account in every decision. Yeah. One, you know, however many years ago, Wendy, when we put these goals in place, it was in part so that administration knew kind of where we wanted to go early and could take that into account in every decision, but also so that the community would have some idea of where their taxes are going to go over 5 years. You know, if you're going to go like this, it's hard to plan your life, your own budget, you know.
And I think in the past we've had sort of like a mental picture of what that should be, but I think having a concrete, tangible in paper in terms of a Board of Education goal that we know that we're charged to maintain, it does provide for that.
But you've done it with growth, which, I mean, I got to...
That's the hardest part.
I know you're not done with your presentation, but I got to commend you because, and that's why we put in that growth piece, because just maintaining, I think, is unacceptable, you know? And that's where you have to scratch your head and think harder. How can we save more to grow and come in, you know, where we need to be? So,
and I think if you really look at some of the presentations this evening, you see that all the growth is actually student-driven, which is the greatest piece. And it is exactly what you said, Josh, in terms of trying to cleverly look at our program, look at our budget, and find ways to build growth without necessarily, you know, being cognizant of the financial constraints that we have and the responsibility that we have as an administration to the community to keep that within, you know, a reasonable increase.
And we're already looking out right now, to be honest to everybody, we're looking out 5 years right now. So we already have plans. You know, it's funny, we almost got a crystal ball. We see next year's presentation. You know, it's fluid and it changes as Pipe comes forward and okay, then we have that. You know, but it's true. But we're past this on what's gonna be next and being able, that's where it gets a little dicey to fit it in to this as well, because I know next year I don't think there's gonna be any pressure taken off us financially. I'm sure that the board will just as steadfast on keeping us where we're at.
Absolutely. Lastly, I just want to give the Board of Education a lot of credit to have the foresight to add the last two bullets. Because the conditional budget increases that are specified within the bullets on top kind of takes into consideration the last two bullets, which basically says that foregoing assumes no significant unforecast state aid cuts or increases of more than 2% over 2016-17 in TRS or ERS. Those are things that we have very little control over. So despite the fact that we're trying to maintain a conservative and responsible budget, at any time, these numbers can decrease in terms of state aid, they can increase in terms of TRS, ERS, teacher retirement system, employment retirement system, what we don't have control over. So the fact that the Board of Education put this in, I do commend the board for this, for having the foresight to do this, because we have these goals and we're maintaining them, but there are other contingencies that we have very little control over.
Great. And then the last slide, you see this one every year, so the community and the board have seen this last slide, just to give you kind of a breakdown. As you see, once again, there the 2.31 does include the 0.67 for capital project. Right now, mathematically, in an average house in Santa Maria, with the school tax is about $7,200. Our proposed tax levy increase of 2.31 is $166.67. And mathematically, it's just timesing that number, the 719962, by 1.0231. That's how you get that number. Carol Perkins will do anybody who would like to see their own taxes. Bring your tax bill to her if you have a problem with the math. She will certainly give you your exact number. One thing, Josh, it's funny, you were asking the same question about the bond. Out of that, and you can tell me my calculation is wrong, Carol, but I have $48 of that $166 is actually for the bond itself. I know it's previously approved, but nonetheless, it still has to be passed, which always perplexes me in a budget. But yes, it's in there. And Ms. Perkins definitely is available to do your calculations. Just bring me the bill. She likes those calls.
Do you have any questions? Yeah. Thank you. Next section of the agenda tonight, questions and comments from the community on tonight's agenda only. We're recording, so if you have any, come up. Stay tuned.
Good evening. My name is Marcus Babzi. A couple of general comments. I think we had some really great presentations tonight. The science program is really moving forward. That's great. I would urge, if it's not already being done, to advertise in middle school and go to classrooms maybe and talk to the kids about the research program and generate some excitement. I think that would be great.
If I could enter, we actually did do that one for Tasha in the 8th grade. Mr. Deans and actually Mr. Gazzo moved into the 8th grade classes and kind of introduced the program, and that's how we hope to kind of draw the interest of the 9th graders or the current 8th graders moving into the 8th grade picture.
Yeah, I think it's great participation. Second comment was I actually attended the presentation by Mr. Peter Van Busker a couple of nights ago. It's a great presentation also. I reminded myself of things I've forgotten about college applications, how things have changed. I think it was good that we had the number of participants we did, but I think there's room for improvement there as well. It's important to get these ideas into the kids' heads early enough. You don't want to intimidate them if they're ninth graders, right? But at the same time, they should be starting to have these ideas germinate in their heads. So I don't know what we can do to attract more attention. Maybe bribe the students, have the guidance counselors arrange for something attractive. But we got robocalls from Mr. Caswell. And I think probably there's a little more that can be done to advertise that. The district's paying for it, I'm sure. So we should make the most out of that.
Firmly agree. Completely and totally agree.
The next item I have is a question. So it was a very thorough budget presentation. I'm just trying to understand, maybe you could help me a little bit, the increase. So we've got 0.14% growth in the program, 0.67 capital project debt service, which is basically fixing our plan and making sure we have the facilities. The 1.5% general ops expenses I'm less clear on. It seemed like
the proposed expenditure slide.
Yeah.
Which is this one.
Right.
I mean, if you look, salary increases 313.
Right. So that was with some turnover of staff members, and I think you, Josh, said...
So it would have been 5.
Would have been 5. So how much of that 5% is step increases or contractual increases?
The vast majority, and that's kind of what we struggle with, and that's the point of the 1.5 kind of board-imposed cap, is the vast majority of increases from a salary perspective are contractual increases.
Just
what's that?
We never handed these.
Well, so we have the thing. But our step increases, our percentage increases, you know, from a contractual basis. And listen, some of it is expected, right? We don't have raw materials. We're not making a product. All of our inputs are people, right? And
Sure. Normally
those costs go up. But I think when you look at it, you know, you're looking at about a 5%, about $500,000 without those savings. And you could have a year where, you know, our enrollment is up and we have to add, and that's where it gets very, very difficult in how do you find the money to add that. And then, you know, as Carol walked through, the health insurance cost, the benefits cost. I mean, we were helped this year by TRS and ERS, yes. Correct? So that was a help. So if you look at that $380,000 for employee benefits, that was the vast majority of that is health cost. So when you look at those two numbers and you say, wow, you know, salaries and health alone make up about $700,000 of the budget, significant percent.
Sure.
Yeah. You back out, Paul, because you back out that $206,000. Now back out, it would have been, like Josh said, $519,000. But you back out the $206,000 for 2 excess teachers and 1 assignment. So all of that is, you were asking,
right,
the increase.
Okay. So it's predominantly step increases, the $313,000, predominantly step increases.
You have step, you have cost of living increases in, you know, we have 5 union contracts, so you have cost of living increases in some of them, and it depends, you know, they're worded in different ways.
Yeah, longevity increases,
yeah.
Step increases, contractual increases.
And they're all different. All 5 of the contracts are different in how they escalate, but in general, you know, if you look at Somosa, paraprofessional contract, and CMTA, as well as custodians, there are increases for each year that you're here.
Okay. Got it.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any other questions? Yes.
Yeah. I would just like to, if I could go back and build on what Mr. Bazian said, I like the idea of maybe trying to entice people to get out to that program to hear more about the college application process. And you'd say, maybe there's a good way to incentivize that. I know for myself, one of the things I do most of my students being juniors and seniors, I point out to them that if you're not ready to take school seriously as a junior or a senior, when you go to college, your first year, most schools pick an average state school, or even if you go to some type of state school but you're an out-of-state resident, you're going to pay $40,000. So the way I kind of drive the fact home that you're wasting money if you're not taking it seriously is by saying, imagine you buy a nice, you know, entry-level 3 Series BMW and drive it straight to the dump and have it destroyed. Because that's what you do if you don't take your freshman year seriously. I wonder if there's a way to maybe celebrate the students who do get some type of academic scholarship. You know, I don't know how we showcase it, but, you know, I've seen the Intel commercial where they show a guy who invented the USB port walking through the cafeteria, and everyone's, you know, girls are all fainting. He's celebrated as like a rock star. You know, and maybe you can kind of, you know, help to kind of point that out to students who are getting, you know, this guy just got full ride to a school, academics, you know, so maybe stress the importance of that.
Yeah, the Intel, that's their theme with the rock star. If you're watching, you've gone. I went to San Jose a few years back, and exactly what they did when they were winning and charging and running up. It was very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of incentivizing them, celebrating those that achieve, celebrating those that go. You know, I think we need to talk about it in every setting, in sports settings, in every classroom. I mean, guidance is not just, in my view, 3 or 4 people.
Absolutely.
that are kind of, you know, preaching the gospel. It's got to be, they've got to get everybody on board, and maybe they are. That's not my point, but Good point, well taken. Anybody else?
Question in the point on four and the additional programmatic offerings. You talked about the book club at the high school, youth and government at the middle school, and then what are the other programs that we've got?
There's several. So high school is book club series about science, which is another science layer, maybe not a science research type of kid, but someone who's just interested in, you know, learning more about science and being part of an organization. Also vocal jazz and jazz band at the middle school. Similar to the philosophy of building from the ground up. You know, sometimes kids, like, they may not like band, but they might love jazz band, which then keeps them in the daily program, you know, the in-school program, and then that would be another after-school club. So then also middle school was extending youth and government, adding the robotics assistant advisors, and there's one more, intramurals, which is like clubs slash athletics for sixth graders, and I believe Mr. Phillips said, like, say, seventh graders who would not necessarily be on team sports.
And we actually went over that, Heather, over that amount as far as if you think about, we've added two lacrosse coaches, assistants.
So that is included in that.
Well, it isn't. We've gone over that 30,000. As far as we were concerned as administration, we sat down, we said, well, wait a second, are we adding a middle school sports team?
Right,
because
you're talking about adding a second.
We are.
Volleyball.
Exactly. So that's certainly in there.
That's included in the budget?
It is in the budget. It is in the budget, and we started deciding what do we even present, because we did this last year, too. We went way over that we could, I don't say prove, but that we could show that we definitely...
I'd like to see that growth number. So, the whole, you know, kind of all of those things. What specific things have we added? You know, and this is great, but is that 0.414 really 0.35?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it'd be interesting to see.
I think it would be good to see. I mean, you did a great job presenting, or Carter did a great job presenting how you've kept the growth steady over 5 years, but I think you should highlight that and offset that with the things that have been added.
Yeah, because it's in the 1.5, you're saying. Because
great
it's in
things that people don't see. So see that small incremental steady increase, but what it equates to specifically
programmatically. Because some of it's in the 1.5.
Right.
Yeah. Some of it's in the 1.5.
So it gets lost.
And we sat there and said, well, we don't want to be like, oh, we're so great, we did.
No, well, we should. We should absolutely say, the program we were able to maintain, notwithstanding the numbers that you just talked about, Marcus, at a 1.3 or whatever that actual math is.
Brain is very humble. We don't understand.
Thanks. Anybody else have any questions? All right. Motion to adopt the minutes of the regular meeting on March 22nd, 2017. Motion. Second. All in favor? Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Does anybody have any opposition to I had a question on the budget transfers, but we probably actually answered it, to adopting the basically 6 through 20 in total. Does anybody have any specific questions there? We'll break it out. If not, we'll go through that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Motion to adopt items, you know, I don't have the updated one, so let me not screw up the numbers. 6 through 20, is it still 20?
Yes.
6 through 20 on the agenda. Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. I wanted to take a minute to thank the PTA for the two donations that are set forth in here. The donation that's set forth in here of $1,288. That is to be used for an annual public performance site license for Movie Licensing USA. So thank you very much to the PTA. Brings us to the next section of the agenda tonight, which is questions and comments from the community on items not on tonight's agenda. Anybody have any questions on items not on tonight's agenda?
I just had the one question in regards to the computer lab at the high school. I understand there was some damage and what the protocol is. moving forward because of that?
Yes. Actually, Mr. Thode, if you don't mind, Mr. Thode, some of the protocol.
Sure. I just want to mention, if we have no tackling at the middle school, scores will be very high. As far as the computer lab is concerned, because of the nature of the electronics, they tend to have a large amount of repair costs. So our computer guys, Bill Nofi and Leonard Wright, came to administration and wanted to see if we could review what's going on in the computer labs, if there's anything we could do to kind of safeguard the machines more and so forth. So what they had determined is kids, because there's so many computers, when they go into the computer labs, kids will charge their phones in the USB ports, and that is a significant challenge because it can cause viruses into the computer systems and programs and so forth and so on. Plus there were, mouse damages or mouses missing or keyboard, buttons taken off and things like that. So
what do they do with the buttons?
They'll switch them, they'll take them, whatever. So ultimately, tell that to our tech guys. So ultimately, they came with some recommendations. Mr. Caswell and I met with the tech experts and the teachers that utilize the computer lab, and we basically went over all the different issues, what we can do to prevent some of this stuff from happening, which included disabling the USB ports for students so that they can't use them for any reason or any poor choices, strapping down all the different mouses and things like that. Also, we recognize that it's a technology world and students do need to charge their phones and want to charge their phones, so they're going to supply charging stations at a very cost-effective cost. So that students can use them safely just to charge their phones. So we're trying to give back to the students as well as, protect what we're doing. And with that also, we just came a bunch of different recommendations in our meeting as far as checking in and out of computers, meaning that students will sign in saying there's no damage to my computer, sign out, assign seats.
So every student has their own EID, user ID, whatever?
Yeah.
Yes, but this is more the machines themselves.
Right, you'll be able to track and you'll say, oh, this is...
Yeah, but you won't know who...
If they don't log in, then you won't know that.
Yeah, you won't know... I mean, not every lesson is use of the computers, depending on the course that's offered in the class and so forth and so on. So ultimately, it was just a whole...
Check.
It's a whole system and procedures in place to protect the computers, to minimize costs of repairing computers, keep kids accountable, keep the room secure, and ultimately we ask the teachers to go back. We have a plan in place for once vacation is over we ask the teachers to kind of give the alert to the kids ahead of time so that they know coming forward this is what's going to be happening, so the teachers have been giving that information to the classes that are in school.
So they'll be checked before and after? I'm so sorry.
There's going to be a check. They're still, the tech guys are coming up with a form and procedures and checklists and things like that for the teachers and the students. But students will actually, there'll be some form of the student will check their computer before they use it, sign off on it, and then sign off on it when they leave. Teachers will check it to make sure that there's no damage. And then that way we can excuse that child from... saying the damage was done by this kid or that period or this so forth, because unfortunately we don't have cameras.
This check, an electronic check, like the computer print something out, or literally teachers go in and say the mouse is there or the keys right?
Correct. Something similar to that. That's all in the process of being figured out.
Wow, that's a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be streamlined so that, it obviously doesn't take away a lot of time from instruction or whatever else, but it's really to secure the computers and keep the kids safe from making bad choices or people blaming other kids and so forth and so on. So that was ultimately the goal.
There's not one person supervising all day long, right?
No, there's not like a computer lab person, no.
That
would increase that 0.14 budget.
I know that budget wise and everything, but that's really the best ownership.
Correct.
It's always best, because like I ran computer lab in my library.
Exactly.
I mean, and there were things, but they were rare because they knew that I would pay attention.
Yes.
And it really doesn't make me that one consistent.
And the problem is we have one room where multiple teachers use the room in and out. after school with robotics and so forth, and you know, so there's some complications. So that's why we're trying to put things in place that we can kind of help out the system and hopefully revise as needed as the time goes on and see what works, what doesn't work. Any other questions on that? Also, just wanted to point out just another off of your point of college admissions and so forth. My daughter's school uses Naviance also, and I'm highly involved in her process for college. Naviance offers the ability to create scattergrams basically you could say, for example, at Smithtown East High School, 237 kids applied to Binghamton, and there's a graph on her sheet when she picks her colleges that she's interested in, and it will tell what her GPA is and what her SAT is and what her ACT is, and it will compare versus the 287 kids, and then there's either a green mark if a kid got accepted, a red mark if they were denied, another mark if they were deferred, so she can compare herself to past kids from Smithtown East who've applied to that school and had success and so forth.
Are we using that here?
Yeah, we have. Lisa, I don't think it was the full presentation, but the presentation before that, she had that as part of it. And they do that. It really is a fascinating thing to look at because it is unique to your school community.
Yeah.
And it gives you a point of reference.
Be interesting to also be able to look. I mean, I'm sure we have the data otherwise, but are there areas or schools that we're not looking at? Because it's just not been done year after year after year. Once you're in the guidance and you know the admission people at one school, you're going to talk to them and perhaps push more, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's three or four schools my daughter's interested in that no kid has applied to in Smithtown East. She'll be the first. There's no data. So that scattergram tells that also.
So they do college trips there? Like, does a school take them on trips to see different schools?
Thus far, no. They've had much bigger school, and there's two of them, two high schools, but they have college fairs and so forth.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Great. Next regular meeting is April 19th, 7:30 here in the district office. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussing proposed pending current litigation and other matters of disclosure which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.